Your Honor, thank you kindly. This is only my second time appearing before the Court of Appeals, but a pleasure to appear before each one of you all directly here today. The issues in this case are paramount importance in our state, and they have to deal with the fundamental issue about judicial construction. How is it that you should construe a statute as written by the members of the legislature in our state? And ultimately, this case comes down to whether or not the construction is made by the court in the context of the Terranova decision, which dates back, as you well know, in advance of the changes that were made by the legislature in 2008, are somehow applicable in this case now, or applicable in circumstances where individuals are injured in automobile accidents as innocent guest passengers. In this case, and I would argue that the Court of Appeals has overstepped its boundaries, and I would argue that directly as members of the Court of Appeals, and encourage you not to do so in this case. In both the Jaycox decision, as well as the Rivera decision, there was respect that's essentially given to the legislature, which notes the fact that the legislature made changes in 2008 to the law. But the courts, in effect, then look beyond that. And they, in effect, say, well, even though changes were made to the law in 2008, we're going to engage, if you will, in judicial constructionism in this case, and invoke terms that were not within the parameters that the legislature outlined in 2008. The statute in this case is direct and it's clear. But I also want to point to the court, if you look at the judicial construction standards that apply to the courts of appeals. Each of you as individual judges were appointed by the people, or a representative of the people, and that is governor of the state. The people in and of itself, and when there is a doubt as it relates to law, if there is a doubt in your mind as it relates to whether or not the legislature intended or did not intend something, you must defer to the people and not to simply a prior construction by the Supreme Court, even though you are responsible to look to the Supreme Court for guidance.
In this case, I think the Supreme Court might disagree with you, counsel. We're supposed to follow Supreme Court's rulings. We're bound by them.
You are, Your Honor, and I would argue that you are bound by the Supreme Court's rulings, but you're not bound by a Supreme Court ruling that is in advance of a legislative change. And in this case, the legislature changed the law in 2008. It changed the law to fundamentally alter underinsured motorist coverage in our state. For example, we had anti-stacking provisions. Previously, prior to 2008, you were not allowed to stack an underinsured motorist coverage provision on top of the same policy. The court in the Jaycox case, another division of this court, specifically recognized that yes, you can. The legislature said that you can, in effect, stack underinsured motorist coverage on top of the liability coverage in the same policy. However, another division of this same court in Rivera ruled the exact opposite and ruled in effect that you cannot stack, if you will, underinsured motorist coverage on top of liability coverage, even though the legislature, I believe, made that very clear in 2008. It is the responsibility in terms of the Court of Appeals to deal with ambiguities, but those ambiguities must be resolved in favor of the insurer. You are not at liberty to resolve this issue.
I'd like to turn you in a different direction. Can you walk us through the policy and tell us why your client should win?
Oh, yes, sir, I would be happy.
What language is it in there that you rely on?
Your Honor, the language of the policy in and of itself, we would argue, is actually inconsistent with the law. The language of the policy has an exclusion that says that the UMI coverage under that, the underinsured motorist coverage under that policy. Keep in mind this, Your Honor, forgive me for belaboring the point. The policy was written prior, it did not take into account changes made in 2008 at all. And so the policy as written was completely outdated. The language of that policy specifically stated that you may not stack underinsured motorist coverage on top of the liability portion of that policy. Our argument in this case is that that's completely inconsistent with the law change as made by the legislature in 2008. When the legislature changed the law, as recognized in the Jaycox decision, another division of this court, you are allowed to stack underinsured motorist coverage on top of liability coverage in the same policy. It in effect changes slightly the nature of underinsured motorist coverage so that it sits on top of liability coverage under someone's policy, under the whole idea of the legislature basically saying, listen, we're tired of having accidents in states, in our state, where people are not covered for their injuries. And so we're going to get rid of all of this anti-stacking language. We're going to allow you to stack whatever policy may well exist on top of whatever policy may well exist in a case to provide for full coverage for individuals that are hurt in accidents in our state. So, Your Honor, I'm pointing specifically to the fact that in this particular case, in this document, in the insured document in this case, their document is not only out of date, but it specifically excludes UMI coverage on top, UIM coverage on top.
So you're saying the policy is irrelevant? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the policy in and of itself, to the extent that it is inconsistent with the legislative mandates in 2008, is void and unenforceable. And that is the standard articulated by this very court and by the Supreme Court. It simply is a policy that is void and unenforceable.
Okay, I'm sorry, counsel, for interrupting, but I want to clarify what you're saying is invalid about the policy.
Yes.
The policy has a definition of who is an insured under the policy. Are you saying that that is obsolete under the statute?
I'm saying that their definition of who is an insured under the policy is inconsistent with the statute, and I would argue, Your Honor, it's actually inconsistent with the law in our state as articulated by the Court of Appeals. In particular, I didn't cite the court, Your Honor, and this is just simply a lack of just not seeing the case in advance of briefing. I would encourage the court to take a look at, and I will be glad to supply the court with a supplemental authority, if I may. But there is a decision in particular of the Court of Appeals in the Wyszynski case, and I don't know if the court has already seen that or otherwise been briefed on that case.
What is the citation, please?
It's 976 P. 2nd 891, a 1999 decision, indeed, by the Court of Appeals. In that decision, it was specifically stated, as a result, plaintiff was not covered under her parents' policy because the provision relied upon applied only to persons with substitute or derivative claims. Your Honor, in this case, even though the parents are not for purposes of the policy's definition insureds under the definition of this policy, they are, however, insureds because they stand in place of the insured in this case to assert his wrongful death claim. Under Colorado law, under UIM statutes, they cover wrongful death claims for the individual that is hurt in the bodily injury, suffering death as a result of that injury. That person's injured in the accident. They're dead. They cannot assert the claim.
But so a wrongful death claim is, pardon me, counsel, a wrongful death claim is not an injury claim. It's a death claim. It's a liability claim. And so what I'm concerned about is one of our colleagues, another division of this court has written recently a case that talks about conflating third-party insurance coverage with first-party insurance coverage and how we shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage is first-party coverage and liability coverage is third-party coverage. It sounds to me like you're conflating the two by saying that a wrongful death claim comes under the first-party coverage of uninsured motorist. Can you help me with that?
Your Honor, I hope I understand exactly what you said because I may have misunderstood it, Your Honor. Under the terms of the policy.
Be happy to clarify.
And forgive me if I misunderstand, Your Honor. If I'm injured in an accident, and a person is injured in an accident, and you're an innocent guest passenger, you have a right to assert a claim on the liability portion of that policy for your damages. If you die in the accident, the surviving parents, in this case, have a right to assert a claim against the liability portion of that policy. Our argument is that they also have a right to go after what is the underinsured motorist coverage, which sits on top of the liability policy. I don't know that that's called third-party coverage or not. I don't know exactly how to characterize that, Your Honor. But I do know that underinsured motorist coverage sits on top of the liability policy to cover any gaps, if you will, that exceed the liability portion of the policy.
May I ask a question, though, there?
Yes, sir.
In order to allow them to stack, you're kind of focused on stacking.
Yes.
Forgetting about stacking for a moment, in order for there to be coverage for this claim, wouldn't it be a requirement that there be coverage for this particular claim under the uninsured motorist piece?
Yes.
That's what I'm having trouble with, not the stacking piece.
Exactly.
So I'm having trouble understanding why your argument is that there's coverage for this piece, which is first-party coverage here, for people that are not insured under the policy.
Thank you, Your Honor. That's what I want to encourage, of course, to take a look at the WIPER, and I'm not pronouncing this right, WEIPRKOSKI, Wieprkowski opinion. If you look at that decision, Your Honor, that was a fundamental issue. It's similar to the issue in this case. Do the surviving parents in that case have what's called a derivative claim or a substitute claim in place of the person who was killed in the automobile accident. The court in that case specifically said that the wrongful death claim was in the nature of a derivative or substitute claim. And it said in this case in particular, in contrast, as the trial court determined, plaintiff seeks damages not because of or as a consequence of her mother's actual damages, but because of her own injuries. That was said in that case. In this case, the claim on the part of the parents is a derivative or substitute claim. It is made, in this case, on behalf of the person who was injured in the automobile accident. And that person here died as a result of that accident. So they're entitled to step, if you will, into this place to assert that claim in this case. I'm not clear, Your Honor, that I'm articulating that right as whether that's a third-party or first-party claim. And forgive me for just not being able to do that if I'm not doing it correctly.
That's okay. You may proceed, counsel.
All right.
Counsel?
Yes.
When you say you had an argument about the stacking and how the recent statutes have not prohibited stacking or have prohibited the prohibition of stacking.
Yes.
Are you referring to the family exclusion in the policy, which you say has now been eliminated by the 2002 statutes?
Your Honor, I may well be referring to that, but what I'm also noting is that that provision in and of itself does not apply in this case. That household exclusion, if you will, which prohibits the application of UIM benefits to a member of that household, has no application.
But to that household's automobile.
It has. They argue that as it applies to the automobile. Our argument is that it does not work that for an innocent guest passenger, Your Honor. Here's why. In that same, two vehicles are involved in the accident. One of them has the household exclusion, so there's a person driving in the car. It crashes into the other vehicle. Under the rationale as articulated by the defendant in the case, Your Honor, the person inside of the car has no right to go after the underinsured motorist coverage. However, the person who in the car they hit, who was hurt, to the extent that their damages exceed the liability portion of the policy, they have a right to go after the underinsured motorist coverage of the policy. And the argument is because they weren't riding in the car with the household exclusion, even though they were hit by the car with the household exclusion. Your Honor, it's our argument in this case that that is a fundamental misconstruction of the intention of the legislature in 2008. The innocent guest passenger has no idea, frankly, of what coverages apply with respect to the vehicle they're in. And the legislature made it clear that every land motor vehicle in our state, every one of our roads, is an underinsured motor vehicle, such that innocent people who were injured as a result of the negligence of the person operating that vehicle have a right to go after the liability, and on top of that, the underinsured motorist coverage in that policy, Your Honor. That's our argument. So our argument is that their application of the household exclusion is an error. It's wrong. It's inconsistent with the 2008 amendment as made by the legislature.
Are you talking about the two Court of Appeals cases that you've referred to? Or you pointed at opposing counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. I am pointing at opposing counsel and indicating that they made the argument. But I would also indicate, Your Honor, that certainly in the Rivera case that we believe fundamentally, with all due respect, that they are just plain wrong. That it's really a case in which the court is engaged in judicial constructionism. And it's the reason why I ask respectfully in my brief that the court not simply, for lack of better phrasing, blindly follow its other divisions or its sister divisions, but that I ask that each one of you as judges engage your own analysis in this case.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I'm trying to follow your theory here.
Yes, sir.
Under the pre-2008 the household exclusion would have excluded your client.
It did so, Your Honor, under okay. Terry Nova's interpretation.
Okay.
Yes.
Then in 2008, you're saying that 2008 allows stacking.
Yes.
Therefore,
this household exclusion does not apply?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your reason?
That's in part our reasoning in this case.
Okay.
It allows stacking on top of liability. Well, actually, you're here to look at the overall purpose of the 2008 amendments. When you're looking at a construction in this case, again, giving the benefit of the doubt to the people as opposed to your sister divisions or to the court, but to give to the benefit of the doubt to the people. When the changes were made in 2008, the purpose was to expand UMI coverage to make sure that we were taking into account people who were innocently injured in these accidents. And so it was to expand that coverage. Everything happening in 2008 was a work of expansion, not contraction. If you read, however, the opinion in Terranova and try to apply the 2000 Terranova, which is pre-2008, and try to apply it post-2008, Your Honor, it's a fundamental misconstruction because it doesn't take into account the legislative changes made in 2008. And I would argue, Your Honor, that in any construction that you make in this case, if you're writing the opinion, if the opinion is based solely on an analysis of Terranova and saying, in effect, well, the legislature didn't overrule explicitly some aspect of Terranova or didn't cite to Terranova in the legislative record, Your Honor, I believe that that would represent error on the part of the court.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Unless the panel has any further questions. Thank you.
No, I don't.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, before you begin, because your opposing counsel has cited a case that wasn't cited in the briefs, we will give you an opportunity to respond to that within 7 days by e-filing any response that you want to make to the Wieprzowski case.
I haven't cited, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May the police court, John Rodman, appearing on behalf of Country Preferred Insurance Company. The factual basis upon which this decision was made by Judge Ed Bronfman is really straightforward and relatively repetitive. We've seen this in a number of other cases. We've seen it in the Court of Appeals on a couple of occasions. Although the Terranova case is a little bit different in that the injured, the decedent in that case was actually the owner of the vehicle and was also the passenger on the back of the motorcycle at the time. The facts have been looked at a number of different ways by our appellate courts. The plaintiff's son in this case, Faison Erevin, was a passenger in a vehicle driven by the Country Insurer's son. He was a defined insured under the policy. When he went off the road, Mr. Erevin was thrown from the vehicle and died shortly thereafter. The policy of insurance that is involved here is a Country policy that provided $100,000, $300,000 in liability limits, which is third-party limits, and $100,000, $300,000 coverage in the underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage.
So was there liability insurance that was paid to the claimants here?
And then as a result, correct, the parents brought an action. They actually made a claim, so it didn't go much farther than the claim, but Country then paid the $100,000 policy limits.
For the liability?
Under the liability policy, of course. And then the parents now seek to qualify as first party insurers under the policy of insurance for the uninsured motorist coverage. The policy that, so the court understands, Mr. Erevin is a defined insured under the U coverage. He was an insured, he was authorized to be in the vehicle at the time of the accident, and he would otherwise be covered.
The U coverage being the uninsured motorist coverage.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. Uninsured or
underinsured. Or underinsured. UM or UIM, right?
That's right. And the Country policy defines an uninsured motor vehicle to not include a motor vehicle owned for the regular use of a named insured or any resident of the named insurance. In other words, the insured vehicle cannot be the uninsured vehicle or underinsured vehicle. And that this seems to be a very fundamental understanding in insurance law and something that seems to be well reasoned in the Rivera case and the Jaycox case by.
I think the argument here is that the 2008 legislation did away with that. Can you address that legislation?
Yeah, I'll try to. The 2008 legislation, effective January 1, 2008, made all insured vehicles in the state of Colorado underinsured motor vehicles. And in doing so, it changed the scheme that existed previously, wherein underinsured motorist coverage was provided and had to be offered. It could be rejected in writing, but if it was offered, you were entitled to that coverage. If we took it in this scenario where there's $100,000 in liability coverage, they had to offer, Country would have had to offer $100,000 underinsured motorist coverage. Now, if counsel had, if the insurer had rejected that, and the insurer was then in an automobile accident with a third party, claim, and had damages in excess of $100,000 under the old scheme, the underinsured motorist coverage would not come into play. Under the new scheme, which says that all insured, all motor vehicles in the state of Colorado that are insured are underinsured vehicles, that coverage would then be on top of the liability coverage. And we have this issue about stacking. It's really not a stacking issue, but I understand why we think of it in terms of stacking. Stacking generally applies to multiple policies, different policies that would be on top of another policy. Assuming that there are issues with primacy and set-offs and those kinds of things. So the new statute then allows the $100,000 in effect there to be on top of the liability coverage in the third party context. Now what the court did, really to, I'm sorry, the legislature did, really for clarity purposes, is that anti-stacking provisions are no longer in effect. Well, that seems to be reasonable, otherwise how would it be on top if indeed it is stacking? So it was a clarification type of a change. The statute of 2008 did not change the fundamental concepts that were addressed by Terra Nova. And Terra Nova is an interesting case written by Justice Erickson in which it was recognized, again, fundamentally because of the difference between underinsured motorist coverage and first party or third-party liability coverage, that the two are distinct types of coverages. And under underinsured motorist coverage, there are permitted certain types of limitations. There are permitted limitations as to who the insured is, limitations as to the amount of coverage. And indeed, the Court of Appeals and even other cases besides Rivera and the Jaycox case has stated over the years that there was nothing wrong with having limitations under the underinsured motorist coverage, even limits under the underinsured motorist coverage. As long as it's offered, a person may choose to reject it. So the Terra Nova case has never been set aside, either legislatively or by any other Supreme Court case. In the Apodaca case that was decided in 2011, a lot of the same language was utilized and restated that was in Terra Nova. And of course, I think what is really of interest, if the court were to refer to the Rivera case and specifically their reference to the Davis Conner case, the quote of that case where it said, had the legislature intended to change the intent of the uninsured motor statute, it must be clearly and indubitably manifested. I mean, it has to be stated that this was a public policy change. It's got to be in there. And we know that the legislature has done this in the past. If you look at our premises liability statute, 1321.115. It specifically cites Fitz versus Beagles. It specifically cites Mile High Fence versus Redditch because it changed the policy.
May I interrupt you for a moment, counsel? I'm trying to wrap my head around how, is it possible for somebody who's not defined as an insured under the policy to get uninsured motorist coverage under the policy?
Not from this policy. Now, they can have their own policy.
Right.
And you can have a policy, you may have a policy for uninsured motorist coverage and Judge Marcus's vehicle, and then an accident occurred, you can make a claim for you under your policy.
Right, but with respect to this particular policy, my question is, can anybody who is not defined as an insured in that policy get coverage as an uninsured, uninsured motorist coverage or underinsured motorist coverage for that policy?
Other than the name insured, no. So there's the defined insured, and then there's the named insured.
Okay, other than the named insured. All right, so then is the issue of who's an insured under the policy potentially dispositive?
I think so.
If you decide that someone is not an insured under the policy, do you need to decide any of the other issues?
We'd like you to. We need to have a pronouncement on this. It seems to be pretty clear, but do you have to?
Well, we're not supposed to make pronouncements because they're useful.
I made a bit inappropriate joking a little bit. I didn't mean to, but
I took it in the right spirit, counsel.
Okay. I don't think so. I mean, if you make the determination that they're not an insured under the policy, we know we're talking about first party coverage. First party coverage, of course, is the coverage you go out and buy for yourself for protection for you. Third party is you buy it so that someone else doesn't come after you. So I think if you determine, and I would suggest that they simply are not insured for a number of reasons set forth in the brief, but most specifically they're not defined as insured as that definition is set forth in the policy.
Well, I assume you're also arguing that the vehicle involved is not an underinsured vehicle under the terms of your policy.
That's right. That's right. When you say the vehicle, it was a one-car accident. That's right. You're right, sir.
Yeah, you know, well, this was a one-car accident.
That's right.
And I assume what you're arguing is that under the terms of the policy, that vehicle has been excluded from the definition of underinsured vehicle.
I would agree with that, generally speaking. Exact language, though, it's not included in an exclusion. It's included in the coverage grant. And of course, the policy has the coverage grant that defines who all is insured, what kind of coverage is, and then we have exclusions. In this case, the coverage grant does not extend to someone such as the plaintiffs in this case.
The parents of the deceased.
Yes, sir. That's right. So I think both the Rivera case and the Jaycox case really do properly address the issues. The household exclusion, really, you know, it's an interesting mental gymnastic to see what the effects are if you have the household exclusion applicable to this case, but for your determination, you need not address the household exclusion. And if you want to, do submit to the court if you felt that was necessary. You might look at the Fegley case, which is the old 1991 case where, amazingly, husband and wife were out driving in their own cars and they ran into each other. But that case talks about the effectiveness of the household exclusion. And whether or not once the household exclusion is determined to be applicable, does that mean then that the UIM comes into play? And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't. That our public policy is such that couldn't occur. And remember, the household exclusion is legislatively in place in Colorado. After State Farm versus Myers in 1994, 1984, the legislature came in and enacted the statute within months after that decision was handed down to allow for the household exclusion. But for purposes of the determination in this case, the court need not go over there. Any questions? If there are no other questions, I would respectfully request that the court affirm the order of summary judgment in favor of Country entered by Judge Ed Bronfman. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your excellent briefing and arguments. We appreciate them very much. And the case will now stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.